Welcome everybody, this is the SharePoint Patterns and Practices webcast, essentially also known as the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices, and this time we're going to talk about something around the SharePoint framework. So we're using the SharePoint Patterns and Practices branding within the slides one more time. Today we're going to talk about how can you convert your existing JavaScript applications or apps to the SharePoint framework. So obviously a lot of us have done implementations and applications already using JavaScript, and now that the SharePoint framework is coming out or has come out, depending on when you're watching the video. How can you actually take those existing applications and make them to work together with SharePoint framework and implement them as a client-side web part? My name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a senior program manager in the SharePoint engineering side. And with me today as the main presenter is Waldek Mastergaards, who's an MVP and JavaScript wizard in the title. Waldek, do you want to do a quick intro as well?
Well, you've just introed me, so
I did.
Repeat myself, or I can actually repeat you. So, hi everyone, my name is Waldek Mastergaards. I am MVP. This time around, I am JavaScript wizard, and I work as a senior developer at Rancor.
Excellent. And Waldek is one of those guys who've been doing JavaScript development for a longer time and is specialized on the Angular stuff and React and SharePoint framework as well. But anyway, let's actually get on going with the presentation and deep dive on the things. We're going to spend quite a lot of time in the code today. So Waldek's going to walk through us on a in a real example on Angular, and how that is then getting hosted or converted as a SharePoint framework application or SharePoint framework client web part. But to, before we actually get started, just to verify that everybody gets is aware of this, SharePoint Patterns and Practices is essentially a nickname or a second name for Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices, aka MS Office Dev PnP or SharePoint PnP. They actually both land on the same location. We provide code samples, guidance documentations, monthly community calls where we go through what has happened within the previous month, and case studies as well. The themes are obviously on a SharePoint framework and the SharePoint add-ins, but also Microsoft Graph, Office 365 APIs in general. And remote provisioning and client-side development is the future direction more and more within the SharePoint side. But check out the URL to get access on all of the other webcasts and videos and guidances and samples around the SharePoint development as an example. Cool. But let's actually get started on today's topic. So I'll let Waldek lead the presentation or the talk, and I'll start asking questions whenever suitable on the topics what has been covered. So let's get on going. Thank you, Waldek.
Yep. So over the last few years, we've been already developing Angular applications, and that can be from as small as a single app part on a page to complete single page apps with multiple routes and views. And over the last few months, I've heard quite a few folks wondering, so if they have built anything in the past, will they be able to migrate that to the SharePoint framework and everything else that will become available in the future or not? Will they need to rebuild all of that from scratch? The great news is you can actually quite easily migrate everything that you have built in the past to the SharePoint framework, and we will illustrate that in this webcast using a simple Angular web part. And the approach that we have in mind for this is that although ideally you would rewrite all of the code to make the best use of the available tools, but we realize that that might not be the real life approach. So instead, we will show you the least effort approach to migrate your existing Angular web part to the SharePoint framework, and we will use two-step approach for that. So first, we will migrate the code as is, and then next, we will show you how can you integrate with the SharePoint framework to actually make use of the new WebPart API.
Few things to kind of add on the discussion. Obviously, in this case, we're going to use an Angular as the example, but just as well, it might be something what you implemented using Knockout or React and so on. So that's not really anything specific for Angular, right, Waldek?
Yes, that's correct. And the great thing is that exactly the same approach applies to whether you would use Knockout, Handlebars, React, Angular, or anything else, yep. right? You would first move your code, get it to work on the SharePoint framework, and once it does, you would actually take the next step to integrate that with the new APIs.
Yes. And Absolutely. that's a nice kind of a gradual way of doing that. So as long as you get the application first to work within the SharePoint framework, even though it hasn't been, let's say, transformed to be TypeScript or whatever, because you can run a typical JavaScript there as well. And then you can think about the investments on how much do you want to spend time on converting your existing application to native SharePoint framework functionalities.
Yep. Absolutely. So with that, let us show you what we have built, what we will use as a demo web part to illustrate you the migration process for vanilla Angular applications into SharePoint Framework web parts.
Excellent.
So if you move over to the browser, here you can see a very simplistic to-do web part that is based on a task list. So here you can see some items, and we can really easily add some additional tasks like show demo web part, and we can really quickly add it to the list. When it's done, we can tick it as a done. If we do it too fast, we could untick it. So that's just an easy web part that we have built with Angular, and we embedded that on a classic team site. We use for that a script editor web part. And if we go to the page, if we edit that, you'll actually be able to see that all of that is done as a Angular template or an app that we've embedded directly on the page. So here you see that we load Angular from CDN. We also use ng-office UI fabric directives for easy implementing Office UI fabric in Angular. We also load the Office UI fabric CSS, and then we basically embed directly on the page our Angular template, and we load some additional files and bootstrap the app.
So just a quick comment to notice on this one. So this is, and just to kind of reinforce the message, this is actually using the script editor web part, this is not an app part using yes. an iframe, because those things do not scale that well in the responsive device or within the responsive UIs. And this is actually quite more and more people are using this kind of an options already today within the SharePoint Online and in on-prem.
Absolutely. So within the next few minutes, we're going to show you how to migrate that into a new SharePoint Framework web part that looks exactly like that in the SharePoint Workbench. So before we dive, let me just quickly show you the code of this Angular web part so that you can get a better overview like what it contains itself. So here is our HTML, which basically is nothing else than links to Angular, ng-office UI, Fabric, CSS. Then is our template. This web part has only one route, one template. So it's not that big. And then we also load the module, configs, data service, and controller, which are here. So the module does nothing else than to instantiate the Angular app and load ng-office UI fabric into that, which we see here in line 5 and 6. Then we also have config, where we specify URL of the API to our site. So the web part that you have seen is placed on a sub-site called to-do. There's also a tasks list that we have added called to-do, and we have that name here. And here is also another option that allow us to control whether we want to show tasks that are done or not on a screen. So we can change that between true and false, and with that control how the web part shows the data. Then we also have data service that we use to interact with the SharePoint API to get the data and update it. And there is also our controller that we use to control the page and to actually interact between the data and the view model. So with that, let's start migrating that to a new client-side web part based on SharePoint framework. So the first thing that we do is to create a new project. So here, let's create a new folder called SPPNP 16 and CD into it. And then we will call the Yeoman generator. And so currently I'm doing that based on the pre-release version of the tools. And it could be that by the time that the tools ship, that command will change. But basically the basic step is here to create new project.
Yeah.
So we call yo at ms/SharePoint. We create new project. The Yeoman generator will run. We don't want to change the name, so we'll just stick with the SPPNP16. And here you see additional prompt that you won't see when the tools are available.
Yes.
So let me just type
There's some additional settings and adjustments in the preview release of this one, and this will look slightly different when stuff is getting released, fully released. We'll absolutely make a proper messaging around that so that people know how to get started, and we do have a simple videos at that time available as well.
In the meanwhile, the project is done, and because we will be migrating a client-side web part, let's choose to actually add that to our project, and let's call that SPPNP to do. We won't add any description, and we don't want to use any JavaScript framework. And with that, we are done. So before we start migrating, let's just have a quick look at what we got created. So because I have already browser open, I don't want to open it from here. I just want to start the workbench and be able to see what I have in there. So let me refresh this page, and I will start developer tools just to ensure that there is no cache. So I disabled cache. Let me remove this web part, refresh the page, and add it to the page. So here you can see our SPPNP to do web part, and if we edit it, we can see that it's working, because if we change any text, you can see that appeared directly here on the screen.
Right. Just a quick clarification on that one is somebody is actually kind of looking into the URL and saying, hey, that's not a local host. What are you actually showing? So the JavaScript itself, which is now hosted or running in the local host, is actually being shown in the context of SharePoint, SharePoint hosted SharePoint Workbench. Just to kind of clarify.
That's correct. Yes. And that's exactly why we did that. We did that to actually be able to interact with SharePoint REST API.
Yeah,
right.
So we have the context. We can actually access the SharePoint because we have also the permissions and the tokens to do that while we are in the context of SharePoint.
Yes, exactly. So with that, you can see that we have baseline that we can now use to migrate the web part. So let's close this one, and let's cancel this. And let's open actually the folder where our project is located. Let's move it to the right. And then let's go to our Angular web part that we had. Let's open that folder as well. And the first thing that we will do is to copy all files of our app into the new SharePoint Framework client-side web app part. And with that, migration is done. Not really.
That was fast.
Yes.
And obviously,
even though
that doesn't quite look like a Windows File Explorer, obviously the process is exactly the same, even though it doesn't matter if you're using a Mac or Apple or Windows.
Yes.
So
you copy
all of these tools
files.
Will work exactly the same. Yes, exactly.
Yes, that's correct. So now let me open the code editor and to actually be able to edit our project. So as I told you first, the web part that we've built loads Angular and ng-office UI fabric from CDN. So let's do that as a first step. Let's add that to the configuration of our web part, and we do that in the manifest. So here we can add another property called preload modules. And as we said, all of that is based on the pre-release version of the tools. It could be that by the time they ship, these commands will change. Right, but what we want to do here is to add a list of modules and scripts that we want to load before the web part. So here we add Angular, and we add ng-office UI fabric. And as you can imagine, we are not done with that because we only specified the names, but we didn't specify any path. So we do that by adding additional property called config, and here we first specify paths. So with paths, we use, for example, the identifier of Angular, and we say Dear SharePoint Framework, you can grab Angular from this URL. Let me get the CDN URLs that I have here. So here I have the CDN URL for Angular. And let me do exactly the same for ng-office UI Fabric. And it's really important that these names match, because otherwise SharePoint Framework will not be able to load your script. So let's do that. In general, this is the moment when we would be done. However, oh yeah, and we need to change it to 1.5.5 because ng-office UI Fabric relies on Angular 1.5.5. Anyway, as I said, there's one more thing that we have to do, and it has to do with the fact that Angular is not a module. It's just a global script. So with that, in order for that to load, we actually have to specify additional property, and that's the thing that you will have to do for all JavaScript scripts that are not modules. So like jQuery, jQuery widgets, plugins, Angular UI stuff, all of that. And the thing is that might change, but whenever you see that you cannot load additional script, the odds are high that it has to be set up as a global script. And the way you do that is a bit different because you used a URL. And then for that URL, you have to set two properties. So first one is format, global. And then you also have to say exports Angular. So with that will be the variable available to other scripts in your web part. So with that, we are good to go. And now whenever we load the web part, we will get these two additional scripts. So the next part is actually to do something about the files that we've added here, right? So we can actually include them here within the web part. And there are, in theory, there are two ways in which you could do it. So the one is to do it here. So here you would say import app, and here we would say app module.js. And in theory, that would work, except for the fact that we use that module here is a self-invoking function that already depends on Angular. And because we load Angular from CDN, it could be the case that it takes a bit longer to load, and it would come in too late for this script. So it would throw an error that it does not know what Angular is. So in order to work around that, another approach that we can use is to go here to the body, and here we say require app module.js. So the net effect is exactly the same. We will run the contents of this script. And as I said, it's a self-invoking function, so there is nothing else for us to do except to include the contents of this page, because whenever it's parsed, it will already run. Right? So that's how we can do it. And because we are in the render function, Angular is available by that time. Right? So we can include all of that here. So let's do that for app module, app.config. What else do we have there? We have the data.service, and we have home.controller. So in your Angular application, you would do that for all scripts that you want to load up front. Right? If you would have Angular and you would like to load scripts on demand, you would do all of that in Angular. But this is for scripts that you want to do up front. And as you can see here, there is, it seems like TypeScript does not know require. Require, in this case, comes from Webpack. And it's there and it would work, but that way we would keep having this error. So one way to work around that is to install typings for Node.js. So we can do that by going here and saying tsd install node save. So that way we will get some additional typings for TypeScript, and when we now modify the file, the error is gone. Nothing has changed how this works. This require function does not come from Node, it comes from Webpack, but that's just an easy way to trick TypeScript and to tell it everything's all right, there is no need for you to worry. So with that, the next step is to include our template here. So, right, so let's replace this with the HTML template of our Angular application, which we had here. So let me just quickly change screens, go to index.html, and here is the container that we use. So let me copy all of that, let me switch back and replace this. Let me just format it here. All right, so now we have our Angular template directly in a page. So the last thing left for us to do is to actually bootstrap the Angular app. And we do that by saying let Angular, any. Currently, we don't care about the typings. And we can get the reference from the loaded modules variable passed into the constructor, or actually the instance variable of this Webpart class. And here we can use exactly the same name that we use in our preload modules here. So because we use this name, that's exactly the same name that we can use here to get instance of Angular. And then what we have to do is we say Angular bootstrap, and then we pass the element, which is the DOM element, which is the HTML element that we have here, and we pass the name of our app. One thing that you have to keep in mind is that render function that you see here runs every single time you change config of your web part, right? So every single time you change property or settings, value or anything, the web part will render. And one thing that you might know about Angular is that you bootstrap your app only once. So in order for that, for this code not to run every single time, what you can do is you can make use of the rendered once property, which is available within the web part, and then when it's already done, when it run this code initially, that will equal true, so we can basically skip that. So with that, we should be good to go. We have included our files, we have included the module configs, data service controller, we have included template, we have bootstrapped our app, and we load Angular and ng-office UI fabric from CDN. So let's just save that, and let's check if everything's run. So let's just clear this one, and then we will say gulp serve no browser, which will basically build our app, run it on a local web server so that we will be able to add it to the page. And the one thing that you have to keep in mind is that the manifest of the web part as well as the workbench, that all of it is heavily cached. So it could be that in some scenarios you won't immediately say or see the last changes that you have applied to the code. In that case, it always helps to reload the page, refresh the page, and then add the web part. And based on that, we are getting an error. Error. It does not to do. Did I actually call it to do? Yes, it's called to do app, not to do. Sorry, my error. So yes,
it's a good way. It's actually good that there's always an exception.
Yes, there's always exception in demos. Exactly.
That was by design within the webcast. So scripted in this highly scripted webcast mode. So
exactly, and that's actually proved that yes, we do understand the code that we write. Yes. So with that, you can see now that's there. But there are two things that don't really match. So the first that you see is that while it seems styled, there are bullets here that we didn't see before, right? And that has to do with the fact that the pre-release version of SharePoint Workbench uses an older version of Office UI Fabric in which you had to style a list with a div and not with UL and li, which we use here. So there are two ways in which we could go around that, or there are actually three ways. We could change our code to div, which is what we don't want to do because we don't want to change our app. Another one would be to raise an issue to Microsoft. Not really the best option.
Which is fair as well.
yes, sure. But how about we actually include our own version of Office UI Fabric to prove how flexible all of that is, and that it actually offers you a full control of what you want to use.
Yeah.
So with that, let's actually do this. So first, let's install Office UI Fabric in this project. So let's stop that, and let's say npm i, which is install, Office UI Fabric -s. which means save. So we will save Office UI Fabric as a dependency in our project. And that should be done any moment now. It's really, really fast on a Mac.
It's actually interesting that it's must typically these are faster in Mac than they are in Windows. I don't know why.
Yes, and I have no idea why either, but it's just the thing that I've seen.
Not that Mac would be actually faster than Windows, because that's not what it implies, but...
Anyways, since we are done, so let's now include Office UI Fabric CSS in our project. So we do that by saying import, and then we say this, and believe me, that's the right path. Office not modules Office UI Fabric this CSS fabric.css, and we need to do this twice because we need CSS and we need components fabric.min.css and fabric.components.min, and this path is exactly the path that you can see here. So on the left hand side we go to node modules. We scroll all the way down through all the packages that we have in our project, and we go to Office UI Fabric, dist, CSS, and here we have fabric.min.css and fabric.components.min, so all of that. And with that, we should have the latest version of Office UI Fabric available, right? So let's try and see if that will build. Gulp bundle. And 3, 2, 1. Whoa, what happened? Error. If we scroll all the way up, we will see error. We will see that Webpack does not know how to parse the star comment in CSS. So does that mean that we cannot embed CSS in our web parser, or how do we have to go around that? Well, it turns out that Webpack is really flexible, and it knows the concept of orders that you can use to embed additional types of files within your bundles. So for CSS, it has two of them. So we do that by installing NPMI, and then we install style loader and CSS loader to our project, and we install them as developer dependency. So we don't need them on runtime, we only need them during bundling. So we basically add these two tools to Webpack in order to be able to bundle CSS within our web part. And they are installing, they are almost done. And 3, 2, 1, they are done. Okay, no errors here. And you tell Webpack that you want to use the loader by typing its name, so style, exclamation mark. And we actually want to use two of them. So we use style exclamation mark, CSS exclamation mark, and we do that twice. So we do that here, we type here, and we say gulp bundle. Just check that everything's built, right? Because we could run it directly, but that's an easy way for us to check whether everything's built. We have no errors here. So how about now we try to run it again by calling gulp serve, no browser. So once again, we will rebundle the whole thing. We will package our Office UI Fabric in it, the latest version. And now if we go back to SharePoint Workbench, we reload the web part, and now we can see that the bullet marks are gone. The only thing that still isn't there is the fact that items that are done, which are these two, are stricken through. Stricken through, is that the right word? There is a strike-through style applied to it.
Strike-through.
There you go. Yeah. Yes, and all of that has been done in our custom CSS that we haven't moved yet. So if we go back to folders, here is the style CSS file that we did not apply. So let me just show you that. So here it is here in our Angular web part, and we haven't moved it to our Angular app or to our SharePoint framework web part. So let's move that. Let me zoom out. And back to our project, we can now see that the file is available here. So the only thing left for us to do is to go back to our web part and actually embed the style in our bundle. So we say style exclamation mark, CSS exclamation mark, ./styles.css. We save it. All of that is actually being rebuilt in the background, so we don't need to do anything about that except for reload. And now we can see that the web part is styled and that we actually have exactly what we had initially. So we have the same web part that we had first, actually migrated now to a client-side web part based on SharePoint framework. But there is, the great thing is that this is great, great already, but there's actually more that can be done. What if, imagine that the config that you have seen here, let me just show you that. Let me just close the node module folder here. Here you can, for example, see some properties that we had set on the web part. What if we could actually set them not via code, but here using the property pane?
That would be pretty good and typical request, no doubt. Yeah.
Absolutely, and that would definitely be the thing that users would expect of it, because that's the way web part in SharePoint would work, right?
Absolutely.
So before we start doing that, let's have a quick look at the slides, how you would approach that. So here we had the demo slide, and here is just a quick reference of all the steps that we have done. So that's for you as an after read. And then there's also additional part for that, but first let's go through that. Right, so as you have seen in Angular, the config is basically passed via two options. You can set the value or constant, right? But these values are set initially, and the thing is that in web parts, they can change. Whereas in Angular, you set them once, and they are set in code, and they just work. And when they are passed to, for example, services, which are created only once during the lifetime, there's no way to update them, right? Which is exactly what you would like to do in Angular or in the web part. So one way to work around that is, oh yeah, and there's also one more thing that you have to keep in mind is that the values of these properties are set in the web part outside of Angular. And in order for us to use them in Angular, we actually have to pass them from the web part into our Angular app. And one way to go around that is to broadcast a change event on the root scope within the web part, and subscribe to that event within controller. So let me show you how that would work. Let's go to our code. So the first thing that we do is we want to have all of that in our code. So let me just split screen so that we have easy access to these variables. And then in our web part, the first thing that we do just to be sure that we don't use any of that is comment out config, right? So here we are in our web part. As I've said, that every single time we change a property, the render function would load, right? So that would change. So we have to take into account that we won't be applying this config once, but we actually have to do all of this. We do it once. But then we also have a way to pass our config from the web part to Angular, right? So whenever you want to implement properties in your web part, the first thing that you have to do is you have to go to manifest and specify them here. Out of the box, there is one called description. So let's actually change that to the properties that we use in our app. So let me just quickly copy paste here. And as you can see, there is small p here, and we are not changing anything. This works. So even if there's a bug, we're not changing anything. And we will pass the same values that we have here to our manifest. The reason why we pass them here is because the values that we set within the manifest will act as default values when you add web part to the page. So we could keep them blank, but that would basically mean that every single time someone would add the web part to the page, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't do anything. You would have to set the values first, right? So depending on what you want to build, you want to choose for yourself whether you want to provide the values or not. Then also add the to-do list name option, which is here, and that's called a to-do. And then we also set the hide finish tasks property, and we'll set it to false initially. Next step is to add these properties to our interface. So this interface is used whenever you want to get or set properties in code. So once again, we specify the names and their types. So this is a string, to-do list name is also a string, and then we have the hide finish task property, which is a Boolean. The last thing that we have to do is to actually add them, add controls for these properties to the property pane. So here we replace the description one that we had with SharePoint API, and let's just really quickly change the string directly here in place, SharePoint API URL. Then we will copy that for the to-do list name. So we'll call that to-do list name. And to-do list name. And then the last one we'll use for our hide finish. Oop, paste it in the wrong place. For our,
Still
again.
In the wrong place.
Yes, still the wrong place. Yes, exactly. But still,
but
we
that
really
actually
understand
shows the power
the
of TypeScript. Absolutely.
Yep. Yes, exactly. And we do understand the code that we write.
Yes.
Right? So here we say the hide finished tasks. We set the label to hide finished tasks. And we actually change the type from text box to toggle. Right? So that we will have.
Yeah. So that will absolutely do the Boolean way of presenting the toggle, the variable. Now, the follow-up question, obviously, at this point for the audience would be, wait a minute. So what kind of types do we actually have there, just out of curiosity? And
so
can I write my own?
Currently, there are available checkbox, custom, which might indicate that you can create actually your own.
Absolutely.
There is drop down, multi-line, text box, and toggle. So
yes.
these are available now, and you can expect that as things evolve and SharePoint framework matures, new types will be made available, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
And still, if there are things not available out of the box, you can build your own.
Yes, because for example, the selection of the list, it would be nice to have a selection of the list as a dropdown or as a picker, which you can actually write by yourself. But
exactly.
Anyway, that's
and
kind
then,
of, you can absolutely do that in the future as well.
Yes, and then you could imagine that you would like to use taxonomy picker, people picker, and all of that, right? So there's really a lot of scenarios for these types of controls to make it really easy for users to work with the web part.
True. And a lot of opportunities actually for the community to come up with a reusable editors as well as a custom editor.
Absolutely. Or for ISVs to build them and sell them.
Absolutely. Yes, that's the other side of the story. There we go.
Yes. Yes. So the last thing left is for us to pass these properties that we set within toolpart pane to Angular. So as we said, one way to do that is through broadcasting an event on RootScope in Angular. So first, let's define a new variable that we will use for storing our injector. Private, and we will get to a second what that exactly is. Whenever you call the Angular Bootstrap function, what you get back is an instance of injector. And that's basically the reference that you can use to get some objects from your app or actually broadcast events. Right? So here, what we want to do, and that's exactly the thing. We want to do all of this setup initially once, but we want to pass properties that we set in the property pane every single time they would change. So let's change this to if not rendered once. So that means when the web parts runs initially, do all of this. So we will set template, we will include files, we will load Angular, we will set our injector, and let's close that, and format code. And then what we will do is we will say this injector get, so that's how we get RootScope reference, and then we broadcast an Angular event on the RootScope, so let's say configuration changed, and in that we will pass arguments, properties that we have changed. So we say SharePoint API is this properties, and here you can see everything that we have defined on our interface here comes now as a part of the object, right? So these three properties that we have specified here in the properties interface are now available to us here. So we have SharePoint API, we have to-do list name, which is this properties to-do list name, and then finally hide finished tasks, properties high finish tasks. All right, so now currently we have mechanism to pass our properties from the property pane into Angular. But now we actually have to do something in Angular about it, right? So here we go to our home controller, and let's subscribe here to our event. So first of all, we have to inject the root scope, because that's where the event is broadcasted on. So we add root scope, and we add that to the constructor of our controller. And then what we say is root scope on. So we basically define event handler for our event, configuration changed. And the handler for that is event, is a function with event and args. And here we say, so if args SharePoint API is not null, so if that's been set, and SharePoint API length, so URL is not empty, and args the same for the to-do list name, if that's not null, and args to-do list name has been set, then we will do some stuff. Otherwise, we don't want to do any stuff. Otherwise, we want to prompt the user that they should set the web part. So here on our view model, let's define some properties that we will use to store the values, right? Because these events occurs or triggers only once, and then we have to keep track of these values, right? So we will have SharePoint API, we'll set it initially to null, to do list name also to null, hide finished tasks, we set it to false, and we also define additional property that we can use to actually prompt the user whether they should set up the web part or not. So needs configuration, and we will set it initially to true. So here, going back to our model or to our template, we can go here and we can say diff ng show, which is how we show things in Angular based on a value or based on a condition, needs configuration. So whenever configuration is needed, we would say, please configure this web part. And when we don't need any configuration, so we say ng show VM needs configuration equals false. Then we do all of this, and I just indent that for easy tracking, and we close the diff. So we will show all of this. We will only show the web part whenever it's set up properly. So we save that. We go back to our controller, and here what we do, okay, so we've just checked that these values are set, so we can now set them onto our view model. Args SharePoint API, to-do list name is args to-do list name. Then we do hide finished tasks, args hides finished tasks, and we say needs configuration is false, load to-dos. Otherwise, we say needs configuration is true. And we remove the load to-dos here, so we don't want to load to-dos every single time the web part would start. No, we only want to do that if it's set. And then the only thing left for us to do is to actually pass the values that we now have within our controller to our service. So here we say VM SharePoint API, VM to-do list name, VM hide finished task. Because when we get items, we might choose not to get the items that are already set if we are not going to do anything with them. Right, so we do that here, and we actually have to pass that into a few more places. So when we add new item, we also have to have the URL and the name of the list. And when we get the items, we still want to specify which do we need. When we delete items, exactly the same. So we need here the URL and the name of the list. And when we get, we need to have all of them. And also here, we need to have URL and the name of the list, and these three guys, and we need to have URL and the name of the list, and we need to have all three parameters to get. And then if we go to our service, we remove the constants that we had initially. And before we remove them here, let's do a sneaky IntelliSense based on the contents to actually add them here easily. So to the list name and hide finished tasks. So now we can remove these parameters here. And we can go to all functions that we have here. SharePoint API to do list name. SharePoint API to do list name. And the last change, SharePoint API to do list name. And with that, we should now be able to control configuration of our Angular app through properties of the web part. So just to check that we are not using config here, all of that is set. The web part is still running. So if we now refresh, what we should see is that the web part won't work. That it will say, please configure the web part. So how come that we see this error even though we specify the values here in the manifest? Well, this has to do with the fact that the web part was already on the page before we changed the manifest. So the manifest with which it has been added to the page does not know about these properties here. So if you want to see that, let's remove the web part, reload the page, add the web part, and now we can see that it works. And if we edit it, we can see our option. And if we change any of them, the web part reloads and hides the items that we have finished because we chose to do that.
So it's all functional. No additional bugs at this point.
Yes, we are getting really good at this. So as you can see, I hope this really illustrates how you can really easily extend the application that you have to integrate with SharePoint framework and to actually make better use of the API available to us.
Yeah. And then the logical kind of a follow-up step would be, no doubt, to bundle or package that as an app file, get it deployed, and then you're able to get it visible in the SharePoint site as well.
Absolutely. So,
but that's something which would, again, take additional time on the demo, and we didn't want to go completely long within this video, even though this is actually a relatively long webcast. Anyway, I think... Yeah. Successful story, no doubt, and we were able to, with relatively small steps, get the existing Angular application included there.
Yes, so what we've done is we've took vanilla Angular application, so no TypeScript, no webpack. We migrated that over to a client-side web part based on SharePoint framework, and when it worked, we actually extended it to add its config to the web part's property pane so that editors of the page can actually configure that web part in UI and not in code.
All good. Actually, that nicely sums up the webcast. Great job, Waldeck, once again on showing how things are getting done. And we'll get there together with the community. We'll get additional guidance out there and samples around all of these topics. Although it slightly depends when you're watching the video, has the SharePoint framework been released or not? It's going to be released on summer 2016. We cannot disclose, unfortunately, at this time, during recording of this video, the exact date. But it's coming out relatively soon, so patience if it has not yet come out for first release tenants. And when it's out, you will absolutely see additional guidance and hands-on labs and getting started guidance on the SharePoint framework. But I think that's it. Thank you, Waldeck. Thank you for a great presentation. Any last words from your side?
Absolutely. I think that it's great to see that we can truly use any framework that we want to build solutions on the SharePoint framework. And it's also great to see that everything that we have built in the past is not a waste of time and money, and that we can really easily migrate that onto everything that's about to come.
Yeah, that's absolutely a really, really important thing to realize, that all of the investments, what people might have done in the past related on this kind of an applications, you do not have to rebuild or start from scratch. You can use that existing code as such, or then you can start doing additional integrations like we did today within the webcast. That's a really, really important point to stress. But okay, I think that's it. Thank you everybody who's watching the video, and we'll come up with a new video sooner or later. So thank you.
Thanks guys, bye.